Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Here on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, we welcome in none other than Howard Beck, the senior NBA writer over at the Bleacher Report. Howard, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
Well, it's good to have you on. And first things first, how in the world will the Pelicans and Anthony Davis figure out a way to come up with $50,000 as they were fined by the NBA over leaking out a story, not even leaking, just flat out telling media outlets that he demands a trade way before his contract is up?
This is the funny part. You can leak the story as long as nobody can prove you leaked it and you don't get fined. But if you go on the record and say, I'm demanding to be traded, or your agent saying, I've demanded a trade for my guy, then you get fined. And by the way, that's like well established. It doesn't happen often because most agents, most players are well aware of the rule and have just decided to do the usual, you know, skulking around and just leaking something to somebody, and they can put it out there. You know, Davis has demanded trade, and you can just do it that way. And because the league can't prove it came directly from you or your agent, you escape the fine. So I don't know why Rich Paul and Anthony Davis decided to go this very direct route. I think maybe because they wanted to have a more of an explanation out there, so just put it on the record. And by the way, yeah, $50,000 is not hurting Anthony Davis or anyone else in his camp. You know, with the money he's making, as I was explaining to my daughter last night, it would be like me giving up a dollar,
which I'm sure you've done from time to time, and it's equally hurt you as bad. Howard Beck joining us on the hotline. So. We've had fans nonstop over the course of the weeks that the Anthony Davis news came out. And here in Cleveland, you got to understand, we're in Cleveland, been through the LeBron saga, him leaving. We've been through Kyrie. We've seen what happened with Kevin Durant leaving Oklahoma City. And they're saying, why bother? Why even root in the NBA? Why even bother with this as a major professional sport? You're somebody who goes around to all the markets. It's a sport you're passionate about. Why should fans in markets like Cleveland, if they know they're going to lose their superstar after a certain amount of time?
You're asking the wrong guy, because in all of my years of being a sports writer, I don't want to go down too deep down this rabbit hole, but in all my years of covering the league, which is this is year 22, I think, I lost the fan in me a long time ago for any sport, anything. So I often sit there and wonder, why are people investing all this time and money? And then I think, you shouldn't ask that. These people are, you know, reading all your stuff and listening to your podcast. I do feel a bit of an emotional disconnect there. I don't know why people invest as much time and emotion in their teams, but, you know, discussion for another day. As far as the NBA goes, and look, I've expressed this concern many, many times on my own podcast, on Zach Lowe's pod. I think that the NBA it has a slow brewing crisis here, or potential crisis, I should say, which is that if this happens every couple of years, another superstar gets into their prime and decides, I don't want to be in Cleveland. I don't want to be in Indiana. I don't want to be in New Orleans. There's a corrosive or just, you know, like a slow erosion of faith, I think, in those markets and among fans of small market teams. And I shouldn't even just say small market. As I often say, it's not really small market, big market. It's destination market, non-destination market, glamour market, non-glamour market. You know, guys don't seek out the cold weather cities, generally speaking. They don't seek out the smaller towns, generally speaking. And so if every time a guy moves, it's Chris Paul going New Orleans to L.A., or now Anthony Davis going New Orleans to L.A. or Boston, or, you know, LeBron going to Miami, LeBron going to L.A., Kyrie going to Boston, Gordon Hayward going to Boston. I mean, I got to think that there's a cumulative effect there. And I don't know that it's good for the NBA, because you need the small markets to be healthy and thriving, and for the fans in those markets to believe that if their teams do the right things and get good players, get great players, that you've got some hope of sustainability. And I think it's a real concern.
Howard, I used to just think, extend the Supermax. You know, just make that extension just worth that much more. But Anthony Davis might be leaving upwards of $80 million on the table. Is there not a number high enough where these players are just putting winning over that much? Because once you have generational wealth, you're pretty much set.
Yeah, I've made this point before myself, both in print and on air, that in Anthony Davis's case, potentially $80 million, as Brian Windhorst tweeted, is true. It's more likely like $35 million. Like if Anthony Davis gets traded and signs an extension immediately with the new team, he drops from the 240 Supermax down to 205. So he's slicing off $35 million, which is a lot of money to, you know, us, but is not to him, because losing $35 million, you're still gaining $205 million. And that is the thing. As I said on Zach's podcast earlier this week, the NBA is a victim of its own success, because the players get 50% of league revenue. League revenue is $8-plus billion now. The players get half. So the maxes and supermaxes are tied to the cap. Therefore, they're getting a massive amount of money. And once you get to that level, the quote-unquote sacrifice of $30 million doesn't seem like that much anymore. The $80 million Brian cited, I think, is more of if Anthony Davis gets traded, does not sign an extension with that team, and then leaves that team to go to another team, then I think that's the drop of $80 million. But still, as you point out, generational money, hundred and something million, you're set for life. Your, you know, heirs are set for life. And it means that money, which for decades was a deciding factor or a persuasive factor in keeping stars at home, is no longer effective. So if the NBA wants to keep players in their markets, they've got to try something else.
Yeah, I just wonder, is that an exercise that the NBA would go down then, where if you just extend it out and, you know, like for this instance, maybe it's not worth $80 million, but let's make it a true $80 million difference between the Supermax, or is there just no number too high for them?
I think we're at a point where there is no number. I mean, it's case by case, right? Some players might say, like, Carmelo Anthony never wanted to sacrifice a single dollar in any of the deals that he was involved in his career. And so it depends on the player. But in general, I just think that we have reached a certain threshold here where, the money just isn't persuasive anymore. That's not what's going to keep a guy in his market, because once he's 6-7 years in and he's made a ton and he knows he's going to keep making more at a very, very high level, then he can start prioritizing other things like living in a city he wants to live in or teaming up with certain players, whatever it may be. So I think, you know, ever since the NBA created bird rights back in the 80s and all the other mechanisms in the cap to try to reward players for staying put, it worked for a long time, but it's broken. And again, I need to make this caveat. I'm not against players leaving. In fact, as you guys know, I've always been in favor of players seeking their own happiness wherever it may take them. I had no problem with LeBron leaving either time. You know, that's his choice. They've earned the rights to free agency and to decide their own careers. But that said, from an NBA perspective, and just in terms of the business of the NBA and also the faith you have with your fans, that's where it's a problem. And I don't know what the right solution there is. I've got a couple of ideas, but you know, it can't be a franchise tag that's not fair to the players, and the union would dismiss it out of hand anyway. They'll never get that bargained into the labor deal. But it's like everything, it's complicated.
Howard Beck, join us on the hotline. You can also catch his terrific podcast, as I do oftentimes, anywhere where you can get it. It is The Full 48 with Howard Beck. So let's talk about this story that comes out by Rick Bucher, someone you know very well. Kind of just put it in there as a tag in a column. Maybe he didn't think it would blow up like this, but the Kyrie, according to his sources, would not dismiss a reunion with LeBron James. Cavs fans are not going to want to hear that, Howard.
Neither are Celtics fans, probably. Weird. Yeah, I did not see that coming. You know, I'm not sure what to make of it. Would not rule out is not the same as would welcome or is seeking, right? So maybe, you know, I think it's clear that Kyrie's feelings about LeBron and his time with LeBron have softened in the time that they've now been apart, where Kyrie is in a reflective mode, and we nobody said a few weeks
Reflective, Howard, it's been like a year. It's been like 12 months.
It's been a year and a half. Yeah. But I think, listen, Kyrie's moving from Cleveland to Boston. I interviewed him in the preseason for a feature on Kyrie, and so we talked for a while. Like, he definitely has spent some time reflecting on what drove him away from Cleveland and to LeBron in the first place, and what it means to now be the leader of a different group, where he couldn't be the leader in Cleveland. That was part of the point of the exercise of leaving. And so in doing that, we've seen that he's tripped up a couple of times, and then he's admitted it's harder than I thought. And that's why he reached out to LeBron to say, hey, maybe I was a bit of a knucklehead when I was with you. I think those things are generally healthy and signs of maturity in a guy in his mid-20s. But does that extend out all the way to, and now I miss him so much that I want to reunite with him in L.A. along with Anthony Davis? I mean, I don't know. To me, it still seems a stretch. Everything, all the murmurings I've been hearing in the league for the last couple months were that Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving had been, you know, kind of in touch with each other about the idea of playing together, but that was in Boston. And so, you know, the Celtics need Kyrie in Boston to help, you know, lure Anthony Davis. Now, if you're trading for him, you don't have to lure him, but I mean, to keep him there, keep him happy and make him, you know, incentivize him to sign the extension, you're going to need Kyrie there, I believe.
What type of role does Anthony Davis Sr. play in all this?
I don't know how strong the influence there is, what exact role. I mean, you know, look, every player's got family, agents, business managers, others in their ear. What Anthony Davis's, where the pecking order is for his, you know, inner circle, I couldn't tell you. But I do think that at this stage, you know, it's fair to say that they made the announcement that they made with this timing, with the idea of getting to L.A., but they know that there's a risk there. They know that the Pelicans can, and in my mind should, wait until the summer when Boston can get involved, and you deal him, you make the best deal for you, the Pelicans. The Pelicans are under no obligation to make a trade that's good for anybody other than themselves, so they've got to do, they've got to make the best trade, and I don't think that trade is available to them right now.
Howard Beck joining us on the hotline, providing some NBA perspective here. So let's talk Cavs, a team we don't break down a lot of the games right now for good reason. And last night they won their 11th game of the season. And what that did, Howard, was that took them from having the best odds in the lottery of maintaining a top four or five pick to now they have a legitimate chance to get the fifth, sixth, or seventh pick. Now, I know we're not going to be doing this every single day, but the NBA has attempted to de-incentivize tanking. And I don't think they've done anything to de-incentivize tanking.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I made that same point a while back. I had Adam Silver on the podcast in December, and I said, listen, you know, teams are still tanking. Fans are still rooting for their teams to tank because of Zion Williamson. We're still talking about tanking. I said, if the whole point of this was not just to dissuade a team like Philly from doing what they did, but to also just, you know, camp down on this discussion, this frenzy. And because that's the thing, the league, it's not just that they hated what the Sixers were doing during the process. It's that they hated that fans were actually rooting for their teams to lose. That bothers the league. And that hasn't changed. And I don't know that it's going to change anytime soon, but I will say this. Bottom three teams have the same 14% odds. It's not a huge incentive to tank. And the team with the worst record will have, you know, that 14% chance of number one, but it's like a 50% chance of, I think, number five. I don't have it in front of me. If you look at it rationally, you know, you still want to be in the mix for that top pick if your team is lousy anyway, but really you're taking a much bigger risk than you ever took before by being horrifically bad. If I were a Cavs fan, if I were you guys, I wouldn't spend every morning refreshing the lottery odds. I think it's a futile exercise.
It's all I've got. It's all I've got. What am I supposed to do?
That's all we do.
Break
Howard.
Down Colin Sexton and his, you know, poor shooting like every single night. I mean, it is tough. So many NBA squads, so many cities are all faced with this same thing, Howard. And so I don't know how healthy that is for the NBA, especially if it's going to be the same teams every year.
Yeah, I mean, listen, as I say, I do think that there are concerns here. You know, on the other hand, Cleveland, you know, the lottery's been pretty good to Cleveland. Yeah, they won it, what, like 3 out of 4 years at one point after LeBron left? So it's tough. I mean, the small markets will tell you, in the NBA in particular, that, you know, there's three mechanisms for getting a superstar. There's the draft, there's trades, there's free agency. And for certain markets, free agency is just off the board. You know, the smaller markets, generally speaking, when they're being honest, they know they're not attracting the superstar talent, no matter how much cap room they create, no matter how good the roster is, no matter what else they can offer in terms of competitiveness. No one's going to Utah or Denver or Indianapolis in free agency at an all-star level. It just doesn't happen. And so if you don't have free agency available to you, then it's only trades and the draft. And so having the lottery odds the old way was at least a mechanism that you could kind of manipulate to your benefit if you're a small market. Say, well, we can't get a free agent, but we can get ourselves at the top of the draft board and, you know, and do it from there. So it's the new lottery odds. I understand why they went this direction, but there's a reason why the small markets in particular were largely against it.
All right, Howard, appreciate you coming on. Let's do this again for sure.
Absolutely, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right, there he is, Howard Beck, appearing on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He said something at the start of that, Jonathan. He said the NBA has a slow brewing crisis.
I don't disagree with him.
That's not what Adam Silver and the rest of his cronies there in New York City, that's not what they want to hear. We're in Secaucus. Like, they don't want to hear that.
Well, they don't want us to hear that we want to root for losses either, but this is the situation we're in. They had to have understood this, but I wonder if the NBA is rooting for teams like the Cavs to finish in that seventh slot. So anyone that had an idea or thinking.
Oh, I see. To say, hey, just for all you teams banking your entire future on just losing a lot of games, it's not going to work out. See, you think karma could come back to haunt the Cavs after they've won? Because you hear Howard. He doesn't want to hear about the lottery. The Cavs have won it every year.
Yeah, throw that in our face, Howard. Remember the Anthony Bennett? I mean, come on. Throw that in our face. No, yeah, that's exactly what the NBA wants, though. They want to see. I could bet my life on it. For the first couple years of this inception and this stage of the NBA draft lottery, they want to see the teams that are tanking to the degree that the Cavs are not be rewarded for their efforts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.